Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. So the United States military has been proposing what would be the largest open-air burning by the U.S. military in the United States of explosives. Our guest this week is one of many people who are preventing this from happening. Dr. Brian Salvatore is a professor of chemistry at Louisiana State University Shreveport, where he has been on the faculty since 2003. Dr. Salvatore has twice served as chairman of the Northwest Louisiana section of the American Chemical Society, and he currently represents this section on the National Council of the American Chemical Society. He is also a member of that society's National Committee for Project SEED, that is, Scientific Experience for the Economically Disadvantaged. Dr. Salvatore, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Yes, thank you, David.
What is this base in northern Louisiana? What is its history? How did it get to this point?
Yes, this is Camp Minden, which is currently a state National Guard facility. There's a training facility there. But it is an old munitions manufacturing plant, at least the land that it sits on, and a federal plant, of course, Army. And they used to manufacture and burn munitions there, actually, for many years. And there's strong evidence that it is a Superfund site. There is a lot of damage there in that area environmentally.
And this is an area of relatively poor residents and largely African-American residents. Is that correct?
Yeah, Doyleen, I would say, has a significant African-American population. Doyleen is a city of about 800 people, but about 4 miles away from Doyleen, there's a larger city called Minden, and hence that's the name which Camp Minden derives. And this is all about 35 miles east of Shreveport, just straight east down I-20 from Shreveport, Louisiana. And this is a significant Shreveport and Bossier, I should say. These are twin cities along the Red River with a population of about 300,000 to 400,000 people in this region of the state. This is the ARCLATEX, that stands for Arkansas, Louisiana, and Texas section of Louisiana.
Lately, there have been explosions, and there has been the word put out that if they don't burn this stuff up that they've got stored on this base, it will blow itself up. What has been going on there?
Right. So in October 2012, it was October 15th, at 11:30 p.m., there was a massive explosion. People actually heard it here in the Shreveport-Bossier area, but in Minden, nobody was killed, perhaps quite fortunately, but shockingly. People were knocked out of bed. Windows broke 4 miles away in the town of Minden, and this was largely the propellant M6 and nitrocellulose, which is a partner there of M6. It's the main ingredient of M6. There was some pure nitrocellulose there, which is also known as gun cotton, which self-ignited because of its state of decomposition. Now, these are not just chemical explosives. They are nasty, abused chemical explosives, and they were abused by the contractor that had licensed that site and was working with the Army, supposed to be supervised by the Army. They were not properly supervised. One thing, analogy I've made in the past, is that this whole incident reminds me of, sometimes we will hear from time to time about the old lady who has had 200 cats in her home and nobody knew about it. In this case, it's not cats, though. These are high energy explosives here and propellants. And the thing that prompted, got everybody's attention, was that massive explosion. So this company had accumulated over a few years about 21 to 22 million pounds of these explosives, and we didn't know it. Nobody knew it. It was done under the cover of night. These things were dropped off there, and, everybody knew, I guess, heard the term explosive systems, knew that they were a defense contractor. But we had no idea that they were putting these things out in the grass, in the woods, under trees. They weren't even storing them where they should, in the bunkers that are there. They even had these things along the hallways in their headquarters there, even like in their offices, because they were just getting money for every pound that was dropped off, and they were taking that money, and who knows what they were doing with it, but they were not repurposing chemicals. So they were shut down. They went bankrupt. Then they were shut down, and the state then reclaimed that, and the state won the sweepstakes. I call it the M6 Publishers Clearinghouse sweepstakes here on this 22 million pounds of explosives, and they managed to get rid of some. Some contractors have been told to come in and take theirs away, but we still have there between 16 and 18 million pounds of explosives that the state of Louisiana owns.
And the federal government, until recently, I understand, was sort of taking responsibility and proposing, as we mentioned, to burn this stuff up in open air. Is that what they were telling the public needed to be done?
Well, yes. So after the state, we don't know who gave the order to the state. The General Curtis signed the agreement here to take possession of these materials. So the general takes orders from the governor and also from the U.S. Army. So we don't know exactly who told him to do this, but he signed it. And so once the citizens of Louisiana own these terribly decomposing explosives and propellants, now the EPA steps in and says, you know, you've heard the expression, we're the government and we're here to help you. So what we're going to, we see that you can't afford this. This is a terrible mess. We're going to find a solution for you. So they got the Army to agree to pay. They've already sent $20 million here. It's sitting in an account here. And they said, you know, we'll funnel the money through the super fund of the EPA. So the Army's going to provide the money. It's going to come through the super fund, enabling the EPA to, you know, it's supposed to remedy the situation. But, you know, from the looks of it here, it looks like they're going to create a super fund site here because it's already got enormous environmental damage around it. Now they propose burning on top of all the burying and burning that they've done in decades past. Now they want to just super duper burn here 16 to 18 million pounds of these terrible things. And they are terrible indeed. They're carcinogens. They are endocrine disruptors. They can cause cancer, birth defects, autism. You know, there's evidence that the hydrogen cyanide that's produced from the nitrocellulose itself, which is the main ingredient in M6, causes autism in children. So it's a situation that even I would not, you know, have a nightmare this bad.
And what happens to those carcinogenic chemicals if the stuff is burned?
Well, that's the important question that nobody has answered. So as an organic chemist and as a professor, and just you, David, as you drove in your car today, I mean, you should acknowledge that not everything in your gas tank combusted. There are hydrocarbons in there, particularly some nasty carcinogens like benzene, for example, which is present in about little less than 1% of gasoline is benzene. You know, the automobile, with the, even if it's high-tech spark plugs and it's pressurized cylinders and fuel injectors, carburetor, it does not combust everything. So there are some unburned materials. Now, in an open burn, you cannot control emissions. You cannot control any monitoring. You just basically light this propellant on fire, and oh boy, does it light. It's a high-energy propellant. So it doesn't generate a supersonic shock wave like TNT does, but it does create, you know, quite a fuss when you light it. So it's these materials that we are concerned about are volatile organic compounds. Now, so these are things that can simply evaporate. They don't have to combust, and especially in an open burn, some of the material can go every which way it wants to. It's hot. It's up at its boiling point, and instead of simply combusting or decomposing and becoming harmless materials, it's going to just boil off and become vapor. And when that vapor becomes deposited on particulate matter, dust, okay, that is produced both in the burn but also is present in our everyday air here in our atmosphere. So that dust is airborne, and that dust can go tens or dozens, hundreds of miles. And so this is a big concern.
I imagine it's safe to assume if this were being proposed for 4 miles from a luxury resort where billionaires vacation, it would not be under consideration. We're speaking with Brian Salvatore, who is a professor of chemistry at Louisiana State University, Shreveport. You mentioned, Brian, off the air, the question of whether all of the information put out has been strictly honest and open. What doubts have there been from your point of view?
Well, from my point of view, I first found out about this from the website of the Green Army, which is the General Russell Honorees group now. He's the retired Army general that already saved Louisiana once in the aftermath of Katrina. He came in and after the federal government was not managing things properly, he directed the entire recovery effort there almost single-handedly. And he's a highly respected, he's a hero here. And so he was informed by a lady who's a property owner in an area called Saline, about 35 miles as the crow would fly from there. And that's 35 miles, you might say, well, should she be concerned? And yes, she should. Usually when something like this is done or ever proposed, not even of this scale, there is an environmental impact study that should be done. That's required. And yet nothing of the sort was done here. So I went to the meeting, the public meeting that was held on December 16th, and it was shocking. In fact, it was life-altering what I saw there, and I could not believe it. I started asking questions in the pre-meeting informational section, the expert informational section. So they had these so-called experts there that were supposed to relieve any worries, any of the slightest qualms that somebody might have. So I had some questions, and I went up to the EPA officials, and I said, oh, okay, I see you have some air monitoring equipment here. I happen to be familiar with some of these things, and they looked rudimentary to me. And I said, okay, I see you can measure carbon dioxide, and you can measure carbon monoxide and nitrous oxide, and those are things that would come out of the tailpipe of our car. That's why we have a catalytic converter. We worry about it there. But tell me, what can you tell me about these compounds, these volatile organics? Did you measure any of their emissions from this open burn? After I found out there was no environmental impact study, I was really curious as to what they actually measured in their so-called test burn on December 3rd. And the lady there, who is one of the project managers, said, oh, no, no, it was too hot. It reminded me of a Saturday Night Live. Oh, that's the ticket, too hot. And so I was really quite concerned now. So then I started asking some questions about some numbers I saw there, because they did have some data on one of the compounds I was concerned about, the carcinogen that's supposed to be present in less than 50 parts per trillion in our groundwater. I said, this dinitrotoluene here, I see this 0.0004% here. Where did this come from? You said you didn't measure it. She said, oh, a computer model. And I said, okay, well, I prefer actual measurements as opposed to computer, but I'm listening. Tell me, where did you get the parameters for this computer model? And she hesitated a little bit. I think I had to ask the question twice. And she said, well, we got those from a controlled combustion chamber, the one that Ms. Blaylock has been talking about. And I said, wait a second. The controlled combustion chamber, you mean the thing that you refuse to consider here when you're pressing forward with this open burn, you're doing something that is completely different from the data that you're using here to parameterize your computer model. And I said, that's unbelievable. And she turned her back on me, and she wouldn't talk anymore. She started talking to somebody else, and I said, I'm not going to be steamrolled. And I went back to my seat. The meeting was about to start, the public question and answer session. I talked to Dr. Wilma Subra, who's we're fortunate to have from General Honoree. He sent her up here all the way from New Iberia, Louisiana, which is about 250 miles away. And I told her what I just heard. And she said, well, you probably should bring that up in the question and answer session. So after Ms. Blaylock got nowhere again, asking why they did not consider a controlled combustion chamber and finally gave up because there were no good answers at all. They said they weren't available, which is completely false. I got up there and I explained how I'm familiar with these compounds and how concerned I am. There was no environmental impact study, and yet it looked like any of the data that I had there was not only irrelevant, but outright deceiving. And it brought into question the whole scientific credibility of this whole group. And I remember referring to them as the fourth string team here that they brought here tonight, because team is a very important thing here in Louisiana. Football, college football, LSU, Les Miles would never field anything but his best players. And here I saw that the EPA had brought a group of people before us here to basically pull the wool over our eyes, and they didn't want to bring their best people because none of their best people would do something and put their careers on the line like this, in my opinion. A reporter caught some of that, and then the next day in the Minden Press Herald, there was something about this professor that was there, and he looked at some data, and he didn't like what he saw. But that's about all they said. They didn't get into the specifics, and that was a little bit disappointing, because they continued to lie with any questions that they got from an elected leader. Even our U.S. senator has gotten letters from them, even as recent as a week ago, stating that this emissions here would be like less than a pound of DMT produced by over 15 million pounds of M6, which is 10% DMT. And that's unbelievable. In an open burn, that just is not the truth.
Yeah, well, it is a good thing you were there. I'm reminded of when the U.S. Army couldn't get anyone in Washington to claim that those aluminum tubes in Iraq were for nuclear weapons, because they quite obviously weren't. They found a subcontractor of a contractor here in Charlottesville, Virginia, who was willing to say it for enough money, and then they put it in Colin Powell's speech at the U.N. The fourth string sometimes comes through for them. I understand, though. I mean, I've seen a great deal of noise. You and your allies have been making about this a sign-on letter with all kinds of environmental groups, and I understand there's been something of a victory that they've called off the open burn. Is that correct?
Well, yes. To some extent, that's what we're hoping right now. We don't have clear confirmation of what direction they're heading in. And for the past couple of weeks, the EPA and the Department of Environmental Quality here in Louisiana have been firing letter bombs back and forth at each other at 5 p.m. So we've sent them into a bit of a state of disarray because they cannot answer our question. But what really set this off was a grassroots effort here among concerned citizens. So I was one of the people that raised some early concerns, and I submitted an article to the guest editorial to the Shreveport Times, and people read that, and then other people, a toxicologist from Ruston, Louisiana, which is where Louisiana Tech University is, he got involved. He wrote his own letter concurring with the things I had said, and then adding his own additional toxicology concerns, because the EPA had told us the night of that meeting that their toxicologist had the flu, and that's why they couldn't answer any of our questions that night. So Dr. Flournoy has been a tremendous help. And with a group on Facebook now, we have about 9,000 concerned citizens. And people can join that and go on there and read. This is the place where we educate the public. And we answer questions and we announce meetings and events. And it's been highly successful.
And I saw that this letter with all these organizations signed on to it was organized by a group out of Wisconsin called Citizens for Safe Water Around Badger, which I assume has dealt with similar issues up there.
Yes. Laura Ola is somebody I can remember calling while the Rose Parade was on New Year's Day. That's how recent all this has taken place. I had never known her or heard of really what they were going through until then. And I called Ms. Ola, and she's been incredibly helpful because of all the network that she has and all these organizations that have been working with her, because the Badger Ammunition Plant in Wisconsin is a huge Superfund site. 7,400 acres. They have DNT and DBT in their groundwater from stuff that happened 50 years ago around their propellant burning ground. And so she connected us with people far and wide, both medical concerns, environmental concerns, wildlife concerns, agricultural concerns. Even Aaron Brockovich has joined on here with us.
I saw
so
that.
When we talk to people on the website now, on the Facebook page, I just remind everybody, look, we're not only fighting this battle for ourselves, but we owe everything to the people in Wisconsin, and there's another group that's out in Radford, Virginia, and it's just been wonderful to meet such dedicated people that care so much about the environment, but it's also bittersweet to hear about all of the human tragedy, the environmental damage, and cases of cancer and birth defects that are happening in those areas. And we don't want to enter into that realm even more than we already are.
It interested me, as some other cases of environmental damage and citizen resistance to it related to the U.S. military have interested me, because I saw all these environmental groups lining up against something that the military was doing, when typically they won't oppose militarism or war or gargantuan military budgets, even though the military is almost certainly the number one destroyer of the natural environment that we have. It seems like another good opportunity for environmental groups and peace groups to work together. But I don't even know, are there peace groups in northern Louisiana? Has there been any involvement from people opposed to militarism?
Well, no, that's an interesting question, and North Louisiana is an interesting place. As you can imagine, people are of a rather conservative persuasion here, but this whole issue has brought people together, people of vastly different political philosophies, people of different faith, across many generations here. We have people in their 80s and people in their teens that are equally concerned about this. And so this has been a uniting effort here. And to me, that's quite touching, but it also shows the dire significance that we must be successful here, because this is so important. This could affect people's lives. This could affect our environment for the next century.
Is it now going to be a problem for the state government of Louisiana to fund the cleanup and figure out a solution without any dollars coming from the federal government as it passes the buck?
We don't know if we still have the money sitting in the state's account there, and there was a petition that was passed around. Again, it was initiated here by Francis Kelly and our concerned citizens group, and so one of the things that they are asking for is that the EPA not remove that money that was put here. It came originally from a fund in the Army, and so it's still sitting there. And as we understand it, it would be a terrible miscalculation on their part politically to withdraw that money, just because we're not going to commit environmental suicide here. So they are open now. They claim they're open. And this is the EPA speaking for everybody, including the Army. The Army's silent on all this. So they are open to other alternatives. And in fact, as each day passes, that phrasing becomes a little bit more helpful. Now they're going to help us find these alternatives, and they're being more conducive to a remedy here, but still no specifics. And all the time that this is going on, the drumbeat of these explosives is getting louder, because we know that the stabilizer that is in M6 degrades over time, and as time passes, there's less and less. And they estimate that starting in August of this year, some of it, we don't know, the lots have been all mixed up by that contractor, so you can't go in and say there's the old batch and there's the good batch, but some of it is reaching a critical point of decomposition, after which a spontaneous combustion is something that could happen. And really, it only takes one pellet in one bunker to set off that entire bunker, And there are 97 bunkers out there. And now in terms of the energy, there's, I estimate, about three-quarters of the Hiroshima atomic bomb sitting out there in those 97 bunkers. Now, these are propellants. They are not a nuclear explosion that's going to happen. That energy is not going to be released as fast as that atomic bomb released it, but nevertheless, it is that energy. And if 1% of it is what exploded back in 2012, and that broke windows 4 miles away, I would not want to imagine what 5 or 10 bunkers going off at a time would do to this area and to the people around here. As well, when that something like that happens, you release all of these carcinogens as powder as well. So that would all be put out into our environment.
Incredibly reckless. How can people help? How can people get involved, find your Facebook page or get engaged in any other way if they want to learn more or support what you're doing?
Oh, well, there is this Facebook page. You have to join the group, and then you will be accepted into the group. But these concerned citizens, for the most part, are people that are in this area or friends and family of people that are in this area. Well, anybody's welcome to join. But what I think really what needs to be done is people have to recognize the bigger picture here. I think it would be naive to say, oh, look at those poor people in Louisiana. Look what they're going through. Sorry for them. It's not that simple, okay? There are dozens to hundreds of Camp Mindens around the country. And what has happened here, and I have good reason to believe this, in what I've learned over the past month, is that the Army very often does put pressure on our Environmental Protection Agency to push things along here with the repurposing of these munitions. And you know, we've got 3 million tons of munitions in stockpile in this country by our military. 3 million tons, and about 17% of those 3 million tons are deemed obsolete. And they have to have their munitions taken out of, the propellant has to be removed, and it has to be destroyed or repurposed in some way. So right now, in this country, there are 50,000 tons of propellant and ordnance, explosives, sitting somewhere. We've got 20% of it here in Louisiana in a very bad state, lucky us, but this is not the only place where this is happening. And these particles that contain this material, they can blow with the wind. And so they can travel, like I said, 10, dozens, hundreds of miles.
It is a horrifying but important note that we are going to have to end on because we are out of time. Dr. Brian Salvatore from Louisiana State University Shreveport, thank you very, very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you for the opportunity.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.